he would, you know, he would try out for all kinds of alliterative effects.
Yes.
Parallelism, reversing words, subjects, predicates, to get the greatest emotional impact.
Yes, yes.
I never seen anybody write that way.
Yeah.
But the product that came out was stunning.
Yes, that's right.
Any event, he had put together the manuscript for the Office of the Lord.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
I hope that's more reliable than mine.
It's okay, I have other batteries if you need it. The manuscript of The Earth is the Lord's.
So I took it home to my apartment, and I read it in one night. Mm. And I was absolutely overwhelmed by it. I felt that he had captured the spiritual and cultural essence of European Jewry. I began to understand my parents.
Mm.
I also began to understand what it was that we lost.
Yes.
And the destruction. And that's why he wrote it.
Yes.
He really wrote that as a memorial to Polish Jewry,
yeah.
East European Jewry.
Yeah.
And the loss we suffered as a result of the Nazi Holocaust.
Okay.
It was a love poem, East European Jewry. And the writing was exquisite. So I took the manuscript in that week to the publisher, who was also a close friend by that time, Henry Schumann,
mm-hmm.
who was something of an esteem.
Yes.
He loved to play the violin more than he loved to publish books. And I said, Henry, I don't know what you're reading now. Whatever it is you're reading, you've got to put it aside. And you've got to read this manuscript by Heschel, The Earth is the Lord's. I said, there's nothing like it. I have not seen anything like this anywhere. So Schumann took the book up to the library. And a few days he called me in. He said, this is exquisite.
Mm.
He had almost a kind of a British affect in his speech.
Mm.
This is absolutely exquisite. I would be honored to publish it. So I called Heschel, went up to see him. I told him. And I said, you know, he almost didn't believe it.
Mm.
But I said, this was Kiddush Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
It really is an act of sanctification.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Henry Schumann would be privileged to publish it. So then I arranged for them to meet, and they hit it off. And they both had this deep aesthetic, almost mystical quality. And Schumann was a secularist in many ways, but also a kind of wonderful seeker. And he was very open to...
What kind of books did he publish?
Oh, he published some classics.
Hmm.
Published Theodor Gaster's Thespis.
Oh, really? Hmm.
And I edited, but it was really his inspiration, a book called The Life of Science series, which is biographies of the greatest scientists in Western civilization.
I see.
Galileo and Darwin.
Yes.
And,
which various people were commissioned to write? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we would get the foremost authorities we could find.
Yes.
In the field to do their biography.
Uh-huh. He was American-born, Schumann? Okay, The Earth is the Lord's.
Well,
I wonder how the connection was this illustrated with the Ilya Shore drawing?
Well, that's an important part of telling the story. Because Schumann developed such almost impassioned feeling about this manuscript.
Mm.
There was something going on in his own Jewish identity, this much. Because I think for a long period of time, he was a classic Jewish intellectual secularist, leftist orientation. And this touched him very deeply in his own personal search for himself. He decided after he read the book a second time, he said, "Mark, I want to do this in a grand manner. I do not want conventional illustrations for this." I had seen some silver work by Ilya Shor, which is just right for this book.
Not at the Jewish Museum, that was too early for that.
Yeah, I had seen it as some person was showing somewhere.
I see.
Someone showed him a piece or in his house somewhere. I don't remember exactly how I was exposed to it, but he just kept talking about Ilya Shor's work. And he said, "I'd like to commission him to do the artwork for the book." So he went to Ilya Shor. I accompanied him at one of the meetings and gave Shor the manuscript. Shor said that he would want to do the artwork for it. And he did these exquisite
work. I love them.
So in Henry Schumann's mind, this was a matter now of making this a permanent contribution, permanent memorial to the understanding of East European Jewry.
Yes.
Not the Holocaust tragedy, but the tragedy of what the Holocaust destroyed.
That's right. That's right.
And well, it did that.
Yeah.
Now, this will sound hard, but it's exactly the way it happened. One of my problems as an editor, I did public relations, it was a very small shop, so everybody did everything. So I did editing and I did public relations as well. I searched out authors for them. One of the concerns I had about having Schumann publish Heschel's book was that Schumann was the complete aesthete. He loved to publish quality books, classic stuff. He had an aversion toward business. He hated the notion that you have to sell books, that you have to become a peddler.
Yeah.
That's why they're pushing, advertising, promoting. As a result of that, he did not sell a great many even of his best books.
Yeah.
That one author sued him because this was his classic work.
Yes, yes.
And he almost did nothing to promote it.
Horrible.
And the author's wife brought him to court.
Yeah.
Any event, I was determined not to let that happen with Heschel's book. Part of it was my own feelings of love and friendship for him and what happened on that day. A large part of it was that I thought this was really a very great book. I was deeply moved by it, and I kept reading it over and again. And then I knew with Schur's woodcuts when they came in, I said, this was exquisite.
Very beautiful.
So I set about making sure the book would not get lost in the shuffle. And I wrote all the press releases for the book, trying to establish its qualities. Most important thing I did was to go up to see Reinhold Niebuhr. Niebuhr had begun developing a relationship with Heschel. He used to call him Father Abraham.
Yes.
And I asked Niebuhr to read the pages. And I said, if you like it, as I hope you will, because I think this is a very great book.
Yes.
You have such standing with New York Times, the Herald Tribune. In those days, the Herald Tribune was a major paper.
Yes, yeah.
That I hope you would offer to do a book review. He said, well, let's see.
Yeah.
He said, you know what I think of Father Abraham.
Yeah.
Great respect for him and great fondness for him. Niebuhr read the book, and the following week he called me. He said, this is spectacular. I've never read anything. Mm. I was moved to tears by it. I said, well, do you think you could find it possible to do a review?
Yeah.
Said, I certainly will. And I don't know what happened with the Times, but the New York Herald Tribune Book Review accepted immediately to take a review from Reinhold Niebuhr on Heschel's person.
Yes.
They devoted a full page to it with at least a quarter of a page of pictures of Heschel.
Yes.
And the Shore woodcuts.
Wonderful. I'd love to see that.
It was a spectacular page.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're in Heschel's files. I'm sure Sylvia must have.
Yeah.
If not, I'll look around to see if...
Yeah, because I haven't been able to find any independent record of that specific review.
Really?
Only of the Man Is Not Alone review. You see.
Yeah, well, this was. This is the point at which Niebuhr spoke of Heschel being a spiritual treasure.
Yeah.
A brand plucked from the fires
yeah.
of the Nazi Holocaust.
Mm.
And in effect said something like, we are certain to be hearing more from him.
Yes.
He has a very rich contribution tonight.
Mm-hmm.
That began to launch Heschel.
That's right.
You know, Niebuhr standing in those days.
That's right.
He was the dominant personality in the intellectual and certainly the theological world.
Hmm.
And, I mean, there were no Catholics to compete with him in the 1950s.
Yeah.
Catholics still were quiescent and withdrawn.
That's interesting to know, to be reminded of that, actually.
Yeah, this is still the Protestant era.
Yeah.
It's still the Protestant era.
So the 40s and
And Niebuhr was the intellectual pope of the Protestant, much of the religious world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This was a man who was talking social justice and human rights.
Oh, yes.
Who opposed the Nazis vigorously.
Yeah.
Organized Christianity in crisis, mainly to attack the Nazis.
Yeah. I see. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Hmm. Very
In the 40s. Became something much else later on.
Yes.
But, and also Niebuhr's personal experience in Detroit when he was a pastor.
Yes.
Has his famous line in his book on secular America, religious and secular America, in which he said that when the 30s and 40s, when he was working with labor unions, his late 30s, the only real Christians in Detroit were the Jews.
Hmm.
As the only people in any numbers
yes.
who came to help this cause of social justice for the Jews.
Very interesting.
And that affected the whole mentality towards Jews and Judaism.
Yeah.
Something was alive and
right.
and redemptive in the Jewish soul.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any event, I'm persuaded the Niebuhr's Review launched
Heschel's
Cup. Yeah. Like a shot around the world.
Yeah.
First of all, for rabbis and Jews to see Reinhold Niebuhr speaking of a Jewish refugee scholar.
That's right.
With these kind of superlative terms, it was like a knock.
Yeah.
You almost hear it through the community. And I don't know whether it ever happened before. I don't recall any Jewish scholar ever getting that kind of attention. It may well have been that Finkelstein did with... Paul Whitmore, people like that, you know.
Yeah.
But in any case, it was dynamite, and I was...
Stephen Wise?
A wholly different way. I mean, he was seen as a Zionist leader, Jewish leader,
yes.
but essentially a leader for the great cause of building Palestine.
I see. I see, I didn't know that.
He was seen in Reform Jews as a Reform Jewish leader.
Right.
But his whole identity as Abihail Silvers.
Yes.
Was shaped by the effort. First of all, it was trying to save Jewish lives during the Nazi Holocaust.
Yes.
And then, toward the end of the war, working to try to establish the State of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Both Wise and Abihail Silver developed their public identity around those two issues.
I see.
They did not develop public identity as Jewish theologians,
yes.
Jewish scholars,
yeah.
With a deep spiritual message.
Yes.
Heschel achieved that.
These are very important distinctions to make with other prominent Jewish figures, public figures, because what Heschel suffered from the Jewish community was a confusion about what he was actually representing for the Jews, what he was doing for the Jews and not doing for the Jews.
Yeah, well, I think that was very complicated.
Yeah.
I mean, in the sense that because Jewish secularism, also that was still an early generation, Jews were embarrassed by all of that.
Mm.
That was still foreignness, that was East European.
Yes.
East European alien nation, and it touched all of their own identity. He was unabashedly talking about God and Torah
that's
and mitzvot.
Right. That's right.
And that was so alien. I mean, that was a generation affected by the whole Marxist movement of
mm-hmm.
the 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
So that's why he had a very small following at the beginning.
Yes.
But the Christians who began reading his work
mm-hmm.
Began to see him as a treasure.
Spiritual
treasure.
That's right.
His mysticism. And then when he became involved in social justice work with Martin Luther King
mm-hmm.
and the Berrigan brothers and all of that, he became heroic. Even a saint in much of the Christian world.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was some feedback because there's a classic line, Heine's, wie es Christen sich, so judelt es sich. As the Christians go, so do the Jews go.
Uh-huh.
Because he was accepted
increasingly,
overwhelmingly by Christians. People began seeing him celebrated. He was invited to cathedrals.
That's right.
But actually that took some time before all that was established. Point is, Earth is the Lord began to be the turning point in his public identity.
What was it about that book that reminded you of your parents? Were your parents Hasidic?
No, they were Orthodox Jews.
Yeah.
They were very pious Orthodox Jews, very poor Orthodox Jews, were kind of cheder education, not terribly learned.
Yeah.
They had this enormous reverence toward Torah and law.
I see.
And toward learning.
Yeah.
I mean, my mother drove us unmercifully to study. And I really owe whatever. I mean, it was not unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Arthur Hertzberg came from Baltimore, same kind of family.
Yeah.
Except his father was a Hasidic rabbi.
I see.
So he had models, role models. I didn't have that kind of role model.
Yeah.
But there was this reverence for learning. And Heschel became the epitome of that tradition
mm-hmm.
and culture.
You don't remember what Heschel represented in the Yiddish press, but you, I guess you already said that there were articles about his Hasidic ancestry.
Some. I think the Yiddish press was essentially ambiguous toward him, ambivalent toward him.
Yeah.
Because he was at the Jewish Theological Seminary.
I see.
But I think Heschel didn't worry terribly much about that. Later on it became a problem during the Vatican Council.
Yeah.
But Heschel kept very close contact with his Hasidic dynasty.
Yes.
The Upter Rav. Used to go frequently. Wolf knows more about that than I do.
Yes.
To Borough Park and Crown Heights.
Yes.
To renew his ties.
Right.
With the Hasidim, and they came to him.
Yeah.
And every once in a while you see the Hasid and Strymel and Payet coming to his office. And,
which wasn't Zalman Shachter.
No. Shachter wasn't Finkelstein. Spiegel, wasn't Lieberman.
Yeah. You know the story about the first time Heschel delivered that talk at Evo in Yiddish. I heard it from two different people that the audience got up and said Kaddish spontaneously and he delivered it in Yiddish.
Because it was a hespit. It was a eulogy.
Yes.
It was a eulogy.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I was not there, but I heard a great deal
of it. Well, what you say really confirms the effect of that text.
Well, the Earth is the Lord was as close as one could come to a hesped, a eulogy.
Yes.
In English.
Yes.
And what saved it from becoming banal was the exquisite, precise use of the language
mm-hmm.
To say what had not been said before in the same way.
Yeah. What is the genre of the hesped?
Hesped is the Hebrew word for eulogy, that mm-hmm. is, to pay tribute to a dead person.
Yes.
And it's a, it was a, almost a cultural product in the sense that Hesped usually had all the greatest rabbis of the town or the country
yes.
would come to eulogize the great colleague.
Yes.
And it was an exercise in learning, too. I mean, uh-huh. they would give a Torah lesson,
I see.
A Talmudic lesson, and then link that to the person who was passing away.
I see.
It was also a display of scholarship,
yes,
too.
Yes.
So it developed this kind of quality. People would come to hear a Hesped.
I see.
As if they were hearing a
sermon.
It was
an event. It was an
event.
Cultural
yeah.
event as well as the content of it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that's very important because the criticism of that book is that it's an idealization. But that criticism essentially is irrelevant given the genre that he was...
No, I don't think it is irrelevant.
No?
I think Heschel quite consciously and deliberately set out to try to capture the spiritual essence, the spiritual depth, because almost all of the writing was about massacres and destruction
yes.
and tragedy.
Yeah.
And somewhere, looking through all of that, no one had a sense
that's right.
of what one is mourning.
Yeah.
He provided the body
that's
over
right.
which everybody was
that's
mourning.
That's right. See, that's what I've discovered in my research, that what's interesting about learning about Heschel before the Holocaust is not the Holocaust, it's what existed before, which is much more difficult to grasp because you have to study it and learn about it.
Right.
The Holocaust is something easy to focus on and to kind of mobilize the American Jewish community around, but it doesn't have much content in relation to what we're trying to talk about now. You know, and the other cultural creations of European Jewry as well, you know, secular and religious.
Right.
So that's a very important
Look,
way of looking at
Polish
that.
Jewry was the largest
yeah.
Jewish community in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And, well,
because his first writings in this country were on prayer and piety. The first article he published in 1942 was, I believe it's an analysis of piety, which was became the final chapter of Man is Not Alone.
Yeah. It's also in The Insecurity of Freedom. has a lovely paper there.
Yes.
It's a paper on,
yeah.
on prayer.
So what you're saying, actually, is that Heschel understood the moment. And that instead of writing about or speaking about destruction and horror, he was trying to remind us and to recapture, revive the spirit of that civilization.
I think he was troubled that in all of the appropriate angst and trauma of the Holocaust, that the reason for it was being lost.
Yes. Yes.
And the reason for it was the incredible spiritual treasures mm-hmm. that were destroyed and could not be restored in the same way.
That's right.
And felt an obligation, it really was a great mitzvah for him, to try to recapture as much of the spirit of that.
Mm.
So that would not be lost
yes.
in all of the Hespeds.
That's right.
It was really his Hesped for East European Jewry.
Yes.
It's his eulogy.
Yeah.
So I understood why people got to say Kaddish. I mean, I felt like saying Kaddish when I finished reading the book.
Yeah.
It was that sense of, you know, one has a sense of what one should not, one was robbed of.
Yes.
One was cheated of.
That's right.
Any event, in terms of his career, I mean, that he began developing something of a reputation in the national community. many Jews had trouble dealing with his kind of themes, piety, prayer, God, mitzvot.
Yeah.
And also were worried whether that was a kind of a throwback to East European Judaism, whether he was a kind of Orthodox Jew in disguise.
Yeah.
Some seminary professors were worried about his emphasis on mysticism and Agada.
Who
felt, well, let Wolf tell you that.
Okay.
Because it was not good.
That's fine. But
it was not good.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some professors who felt that the core of Judaism is its legalism.
Yes.
Halacha.
Yes.
All the rest of it are Baba Mainzes.
Right.
Nice storytelling, narratives, but that's not the core. And he was charged almost with weakening or diverting attention from the core of Judaism.
That's right.
This is a pious man who lived according to the law.
Yeah.
He was as firm as anybody else on the faculty.
Yeah.
So they couldn't dismiss him. So it was what he was writing that they were disturbed about, not his life and not his performance.
That's right. How visible was Mordechai Kaplan's ideology when you were a rabbinical student at JCS?
Oh, he was riding high.
Yeah.
He was.
I consider that a secularistic view of Judaism. Was that really very widespread at JTS?
Yeah, he was a dominant personality.
Late 40s?
He affected me very much.
Yes.
Maybe it was probably an element in my response to Heschel.
Yeah. How did you experience that?
Kaplan himself was also a pious Jew, observant Jew.
Yes.
And but Kaplan was trying to respond to another challenge to Jewish life, namely the impact of John Dewey.
Yes.
And Pierce and others.
Yeah.
Pragmatists.
Yeah.
On the intellectual life of Americans, and certainly on American Jews. And in the process, he emptied religion of its content,
yes,
of its validity.
Yes.
Kaplan's intention,
yes,
was to take Dewey,
yeah,
and his pragmatism,
yeah,
and try to give it some Jewish connection, some Jewish content.
Yeah.
And in fact, he performed an important service.
Yeah.
Namely, many Jewish intellectuals who had been totally alienated from Jewish life came back to Jewish life because of Reconstruction.
Yeah.
And I think it was Kaplan's wish that once they return to this highbrow Judaism,
yeah,
that they would in fact return even further to seek out deeper roots in Jewish religion and culture.
Yeah.
And he did attract a good number of writers, artists, professors.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's very important for me to understand what the cultural alternatives were at the time and what Mordechai Kaplan was trying to